Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be talking with creators about upcoming projects available in the current month's Previews catalog.
You're listening to Drew Ellinger from Comic Book Page and Comics for Fun and Profit podcasts, and I'm here today with Laramie Taylor, the writer, artist, creator of A Voice in the Dark from Image. Welcome, Laramie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about this great book. We love your book, both podcasts. We love your book, A Voice in the Dark, and we love following Zoe and her twisted adventure in college. Tell us about the creative impetus for this book.
Well, the whole thing started out, it was going to be a more of a campy parody send-up of the 80s and 90s slasher horror genre that I grew up on as a kid. Movies like, you know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all of that. And so what I was planning to do with it was taking all of the archetypes and tropes and everything and then flipping them upside down. So rule number one in those movies is the ethnic character always dies first. So in my story, she would be the sole survivor, and that's where Zoe came from. I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, what if she's the survivor because she's actually the killer? And it all grew out of that. And the more I started to develop it, the more I realized I actually had something interesting and serious that I could work with. And started taking it more in a serious direction. And that's how it got to where it is today.
Yeah, we start off in issue one. I mean, it's a great debut issue. You gave us a lot of bang for our buck.
It's
44 pages or something like that?
It's 36 pages of sequentials plus some back matter, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's because the Kickstarter that I used to create the series, the first two issues I did digital through the Kickstarter. Well, the Kickstarter was for a three-part miniseries that I did digitally and then collected as a trade as the reward for the backers and used that as my submission package. But the first two issues were 18 pages, and the third issue was 20 pages. And so I didn't want to put out an 18-page book, especially right out of the gate, and charge, what, $3.99 for it. So I decided I would combine issues 1 and 2 into a double size or a bonus size first issue. And that ended up being the 36-page issue number 1 from Top Cow.
Yeah, it was a great debut. The thing I liked about it the most was, I think, the voices of the characters. They seem really authentic.
Thank you.
Do you know folks that are... I mean, is this just your imagination, or are you basing these on people you've met through your life? Because they really speak with a very authentic voice.
First of all, thank you. But secondly, I think there's a couple reasons behind that. One is that I come from a playwriting background, writing for stage and screen. And so in that, dialogue is really all you have to work with. So creating unique character voices, writing characters that speak differently, that's all a part of that process. So I really focus on that as a writer, and that's where my strength lies. But part of it is, a lot of my characters are bits and pieces of people I've known, bits and pieces of me. I try to put a little bit of myself into each of my characters so I have something to identify with that I can use.
Hopefully not the serial killer part, right?
No, I wear a seatbelt. I wouldn't get very far. But each of the characters, yeah, do have different bits of myself and others in them, and I just kind of develop a unique voice for them as I write them, so that they each talk differently and hopefully come across differently.
Now, we're introduced to Zoe's best friend, Seven, in this first issue.
Yes.
And slash sister, and adopted sister.
Yes.
And
her family adopted her.
And then she kind of takes a back stage as through the next four issues, and we hear reference to her, and I think might talk to her on the phone a couple times, but we don't spend a lot of time with her. Is there future plans for Seven?
Eventually, yes. It depends on how far into the series I get to go. Probably will get to see her again, at the very least in phone conversations, or maybe if Zoe gets to go home for a holiday. But I'm thinking that with her now being a senior in high school, that when she graduates, she may go to the same college and become a member of the cast down the line.
Oh, that's okay. That's really cool. Yeah, she seemed like a really cool character.
But because she had so much to do with why Zoe first gave in to her urges and killed someone, I wanted to have, I wanted to give her an appearance early on to help develop that.
Another strong character I really like is Uncle Zeke. He is,
Zeke is fun.
He's the cop, and he seems, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's one of the few male characters that are, their face are in the panels. Is that correct?
Well, there's only one character, a male character, who I intentionally cut his head off in every panel. But it's the main thing is there just aren't that many male characters in the book. I think there's Zeke, there's Professor Ed Dean, and I think those are the two major male characters in the book. The rest of it's all female. And then, of course, you have the character you're referring to, Brock, who is a basketball player and is like 6'8", and so I always crop his head out of the panels, and it becomes a running joke.
He's too tall.
Yeah, well, it to start out with, it was a bit of a gag, but then in future issues, you actually start seeing him sitting down and things, and there will be something in front of him that's blocking his face. Or I'll just not even bother to draw him from the shoulders up. I'll just crop it on his hands where he's gesturing with his hands, things like that. So you never really get to see his face, except for one brief flash of it in issue 6, which comes out next month. But, yeah, there's just not that many male characters because she lives on campus at a women's college. Most of the characters in the story so far have been female.
Yeah, and some of the female characters we meet are her roommate,
right,
Krista and Ash,
and Mona,
they're really great. And the thing I liked about it, it reminded me of those early days of college where these people you're plunged in tight quarters with, and you pretty much sink or swim right away and become the fastest, tightest little group, and it just kind of replaces your family almost when you're in college. It really rings true.
Well, thank you. And Zoe's three roommates shared the same dorm room the year before, so they already know each other and already have that relationship and connection. So Zoe's kind of the odd girl out in that sense. But they take to her pretty quickly.
And one of the unique things is Zoe quickly establishes a radio show, which is kind of the tie to the title of the book, The Voice in the Dark.
Her show is called Voices in the Dark, yeah.
And it's a little reminiscent to me of the old Christian Slater movie, Pump Up the Volume. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah, there's actual specific little Easter eggs in there.
Oh, because I love that movie. I love that movie as a kid.
If you notice her first show, she goes on the air, the song that's playing as she goes on is Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen.
And maybe that was what triggered it. Okay.
Yeah, that was a little hat tip to that. And then there's also an Easter egg for Heathers, which is another Christian Slater movie with Winona Ryder, because she chooses the name Veronica for her radio name for the first show and asks if there is a JD out there for her.
Oh, so that's great.
That's a reference to Heathers.
I probably saw that maybe 20 times, too.
And then the girl that calls in at the end of issue 1 talking about killing herself chooses the name Heather. And so, yeah, I put in little Easter eggs to things that I like.
That's great. But yeah, she has, issue 2 was really, really an emotional roller coaster for the reader. You are tied in with this phone call that she is taking over the air, and with some really tough consequences at the end of it. And
yeah, it doesn't, the show that's supposed to be Zoe's outlet definitely doesn't go the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, that first show is a bit rough.
Yeah.
But she keeps persevering, and we have this underlying murder mystery, and we get kind of different angles and views on this through different people's perspective. And I think there's a million ways you could go with this. I really have no idea who the killer is or anything, which is great because it keeps me guessing. Is that intentional, that you want to just keep it as murky as possible, or do you want the readers to be able to figure it out?
Well, gradually, okay, first of all, the other killer that we're talking about, that Zeke is investigating his murders, is not a character that you've met yet, as far as it's not, oh, it was him. You know, it's not going to be one of those kinds of things. It's a new character. But you start to, the more I play with that character, I give little glimpses, and each glimpse is a little bit more as to who this other person is. In issue 3, you actually see him leading up to a kill. in issue 5, he calls into her radio show.
Yeah. That's the one I just finished, and that was really creepy.
Well, thank you. And then in issue 6, he actually gets screen time with Zoe, but she doesn't know who he is. It's a Halloween party.
Oh, fantastic.
And so he and she are on the cover of issue 6 together. But he's at the party dressed as Jason Voorhees, so he's got a hockey mask on. And he drops a few clues in the conversation that hopefully the reader, I gave it away now, but hopefully the reader will make the connection that, yes, that is that character. And so the more we see of him, the more we start to learn about him. And then there's a reveal. Literally the last page of issue 7 shows you where I was going with all of it.
We are through issue 5 in print. And then we have, then you said 6 and 7. Coming up, we have the trade. And then we're going to go to a series of mini-series, I understand.
Yeah, so issue 6 will come out in April, issue 7 in May, and then the trade comes out in June.
Okay, so let's talk about that trade paperback then. It is, that's a lot of content for a trade.
Yeah.
Especially from Image. Some of the Image trades we're getting are the first 4 issues or something. So you have really given us 7 solid issues, and some of them double-sized.
Yeah, at least one of them's double-sized. So yeah, like Think Tank, I think, does, and they're my fellow Minotaur book. Think Tank does 4 issues and then a trade. And then The Walking Dead will often do 4 to 6 issues in a trade. Saga will do like 6 issues in a trade at the most. So, 7 issues, it's really more like 8 plus, is pretty hefty. It's going to be 208 pages, I think.
Yeah, 208 pages.
150 to 160 of that alone is just the sequentials. And then there may be a bonus 8 to 10 page story in the back that a friend of mine and a guest artist are writing and drawing that, if it's done in time, will be in the trade as a bonus story. And then I'll put all kinds of other back matter in there.
That's great.
It'll be worth the buy.
Definitely. It's $19.99, and that's for full retail. And I'm sure that it'll be on sale through your local retailer, your local comic shop. Just make sure that they have it in there.
Pre-order, please pre-order. Yes. the retailers, we're doing a retailer incentive on the trade pre-orders. That if they order 10 or more, I think it is, I am doing an original sketch on a backing board for that shop that they can then put up on the wall, they can sell it, they can raffle it, they can do whatever they want with it. But retailers that are ordering at least 10 copies of the trade, I believe, are getting an original sketch from me. And I don't do sketches on paper very often. Because I do the book digitally, I don't really have much in the way of original art, so these are pretty rare.
I think Diamond's last count, there's roughly 3,500 shops. All 3,500 get 10 copies of the trade in, you are going to be a busy guy.
I will shoot myself in the face, yes. No, I was told to expect that I would end up doing probably 50 to 100.
Still some time.
Yeah, exactly. 50 to 100 is going to take some time. But the trade doesn't come out until June, so I'm going to be finishing issue 7 this coming month. I'll have issue 7 done by April 20th, probably, which means that I have the rest of April and all of May and most of June to get all of those sketches done. You know, even if I just did 2 a day, which I can easily do more, you know, if I did 2 a day, I would have it done in time. That's fine.
So after the trade, we're going to go to a series of miniseries, which is really what Image is kind of pioneered. They've been doing that.
Well, it works better for indies. You know, ongoing sales just continue to drop over time, and people buy number ones in a lot higher volume than they buy the rest of the series. And when you're putting out minis, you're guaranteeing you're going to get this number of issues that will tell a whole story, and there'll be a trade at the end. To where an open-ended, ongoing series, you run the risk of, if sales drop, you have to cut it short, or you just drop in the middle of it, and so people are kind of wary to buy into that. Minis, they know it's a limited run, it's only going to be this many issues, they're going to get the whole story, and it'll be done.
And do you think there'll be 5-issue miniseries?
I've plotted out the first one, which I'm tentatively calling A Voice in the Dark, Barrel of a Gun. It'll be 5 issues, yes. It'll be a 5-part. So it'll be part 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, yeah.
Well, I think I really like the way that works in the marketplace. It seems you've got the momentum from the series. It ends, you have the trade, you've readers get a chance to catch up, catch their breath, get excited about that comic, and then when that next issue kicks in, they're ready to go. And you've got that built-in audience. And I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make it easy to, you know, to keep it going that way. I think Lock and Key, for example, was a really good example of doing that. Lock and Key was a series of minis from the outset, and so you knew you were getting X number of issues a year that would tell a story that was a part of a bigger story. And the problem with ongoings also is that people can only really have so many ongoings in their pull list at a time that they can afford. So if you're doing a mini, then it becomes more of a special thing that they set aside, okay, I want to get this when it comes out, and they know the trade's going to be coming, you know, fairly quickly, and it just works better, especially on the indie level, I think. I mean, I'd love to do an ongoing and to keep doing an ongoing, and that's how I pitched it, and it was accepted. But realistically, with indies, the market is shifting towards minis.
Yeah, and not everybody is Kirkman. You know,
exactly.
So yeah, it's a different world now. It
yeah,
really
exactly.
Is.
You know, Image, there's basically kind of two tiers at Image. There's your Kirkman, Remender, Fraction, Mechonic, you know, where they can put out a book and get 20,000 to 40,000 copies sold right out of the gate because they're big names that have developed their names at other, you know, other publishers or, you know, Kirkman's case, The Walking Dead. But, you know, you'll get a Fraction or a Remender or Kelly Mechonic, you know, coming over and they'll put out an Image book and it'll sell 30,000 copies because people know who they are. It's a known quantity. And then you've got the real indies that are, you know, breaking through and trying to get their books off the ground, and we're selling 5,000 to 10,000 copies if we're lucky. So,
and that probably makes it a much more difficult for the numbers to work. There is a cost to publish through Image, $2,500, right, per
That's
issue.
That's for Image Central. I'm Top Cow, so my deal's a bit different. But yeah.
Okay. And then
with Top Cow, because Top Cow actually actively sells the IP for development for television and film, it works a bit differently. So where Image Central doesn't handle your IP, they don't get a cut if you develop it as a movie or a TV series, they don't help you do that. They take their fee for printing and putting you for marketing and publishing and putting you in previews and things like that, and that's a set fee, and then you make everything else, but you're on your own. At Top Cow, it's more of a 50-50 split on everything because they're actively helping to sell the rights and develop it as a movie or a TV show.
So it's more of a publisher within Image that is doing classic publisher duties.
Right. It's the Top Cow's deal is more of a indie publisher deal like you would, you know, see with IDW or, you know, Boom or Archaea or something like that. And it actually, at the lower end, it's working out better for me because I don't have the $2,500 Image fee hanging over my head. I just split 50-50 whatever I make with Top Cow. And so it ends up that I'm pocketing more money with a lower sales record than I would be if I was at Image Central with the Image fee over my head.
But then the downside is you blow up to 50,000 copies, you've got to share more of the pot.
Right. If it gets huge, they're getting a bigger cut. Right. Like when I did, my number one sold over 10,000 copies, so I made, you know, $5,000 to $6,000 on that. I would have made more at Image Central off of issue one, but I would barely be making anything with issue 5 and 6 and 7.
And there's probably a break-even number or a number that Top Cow and you have in your head that you need to sell per month to keep viable.
Right.
Is that something that concerns you, or do you not, you're just an artist and you don't worry about stuff like that?
Well, no, I'm very concerned about that. I have to keep, you know, I want to keep the series going. Because, like I said, it's more of an even split, the minimum number is lower for me than it would be over at Image Central, and it's more a matter of, is it making enough money for me to afford to keep doing it? As long as it's making a profit and the trades are coming out, Top Cow is happy with things, but it's a matter of, is $500 enough for me to kill myself while I'm making a book? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or do I want to wrap it up and put out a new book that might be more accessible and will have a higher starting number and make me more money? That's really the concern. So right now, we're down to about 3,000 to 3,200 a month that the book is doing. And that's still in the acceptable range for me. I'm making maybe 1,500 a month, you know, so It's not great. It's nowhere near the $5,000 or $6,000 that issue number one, you know, brought me, but it's enough that I'm able to pay my bills. You know, I'm able to get by on it. And that's the minimum for me. That's, you know, my requirement is, can I live doing this, and is it worth the time I'm putting into it? As long as it's staying over 3,000, then the answer is yes.
What we need is the HBO series based on this.
Right. I would love to have this, and I don't know that it would work as well on a basic cable like AMC, which did a great job with The Walking Dead or anything like that, because there's a lot of profanity in the book. Yeah. It's not the violence I'm really worried about so much as the profanity. And let's be honest, if it's college-age kids or the main characters, they're going to talk like that. And it's going to be weird if you start censoring all of that. But yeah, I would like to see it as like an HBO or a Showtime, you know, or something like that. You know, one of them pick it up and do it as an ongoing TV series. I think it would be a great TV show. But yeah, that's just my hope, you know, my dream.
I was surprised that last issue when you said it had dipped, and I was really concerned. So
yeah, well, what had happened is, okay, number one did like 10,000 something and went back for a second printing of 1,000. Number two dropped to about 5,400. Number three dropped to about 4,500. Number four dropped to about 3,700. Number five dropped to about 3,300. And then number six looked like it had dropped to 2,700, at which point we were going to bail.
Ooh.
After this trade. But the final order cutoff, it came out closer to 3,200. It went back up some.
Okay.
So it came out just over 3,000. Counting international or anything. When you see the numbers that Diamond puts out, that's for the North American only, it's going to be under 3,000. But the total number counting international is over 3,000. So as long as it stays over 3,000, we're okay. So issue 7, yeah, I'm hoping issue 7 also stays over 3,000. If it drops a little bit more, then, you know, it's the last issue. I can take the, you know, I can bite the bullet on it. But hopefully the trade, you know, being a 1995 trade, I get a much better price point on that. You know, I think I'm making like $4 a copy on that instead of 50 cents. So, you know, if it only even sells 1,000, then I made more on it than I do on two issues of the comic.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm making about $1,500 an issue right now as of issue 5 and 6. So if I do even just 1,000, we're hoping for 1,000 copy pre-order of the trade. If I can even manage to do that, then, you know, that'll be worth two whole issues worth of income right there. So that'll pay for the 2 months that I have off before the next arc starts, because we're talking about putting the mini out in August. So July, there would be nothing out, and then August would start the new series.
How do digital sales factor in?
I have no idea how I'm doing digital. Comixology is way slower in its payouts, which is kind of funny, if you ask
me.
It's way slower in its payouts, and I have no idea how it's selling at Comixology. I know through the Image website store itself, I'm doing but Comixology is apparently where the sales are for digital comics, and I have no idea how much I'm selling there. I have not seen a single one yet.
So it might be a nice check. You don't know.
It could be. It could be great, or it could be
lackluster. You
know, nothing to write home about. Yeah. So, like, I know Think Tank does great digital, but has a harder time in print.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm hoping that I'm doing okay digitally.
Well, some of my favorite books, like Mind Management, over at Dark Horse, it's dipped below 4,000 as well, and I don't know how long Matt Kent can keep that up either.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just a matter of, I don't know. I wish, for as much as people complain about the heroes books with their events every 3 months and you have to buy 10 different crossovers, and
yeah.
I wish people would start giving indies more of a chance and actually start putting their money where their mouth is and buy indies instead that aren't doing that to them. But there's not really anything you can do about it. You can't make them buy your book. And yeah. the real difficulty comes from some of the retailers. I have retailers that tell me that they like my book and they push it, and I sell almost as many copies as Saga does. Because
wow.
They're out there pushing my book at people and getting them to read it and creating new readers for me. And that once they get them to buy it, they keep coming back. But they have to sell it. They have to push it the first time. And that takes effort. And then there are a lot of stores that just don't have the time or the interest to do that. And I don't sell anything there.
It's much easier for those store owners to just say, give me the Marvel and the DC.
Yeah, and the Walking Dead and things like that. But I've had some stores tell me I outsell Saga.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that blew me away. but it's only at the stores that are doing a real concerted effort of hand-selling the first issue to people and getting them on board. I just did a signing in San Diego at a store where when I went in, they had like 9 pulls a month for my book, and then they would put another 10 on the shelf and usually sold most of them. And when I got there to sign, they had people that were coming up and buying 1 through 5, and within about 5 or 6 customers, they were out of 1, and then shortly after, they were out of 2, and by the time I left, they were out of 3 as well, and I was having to sell my copies to make up, you know, so they could buy all 5. And when I left, I got a call the next day, Monday, the very next day, and was told that, the signing was Saturday, so it was 2 days later. I was called and told that they now had 16 pulls for me, and we're going to be ordering another 10 to 15 for the shelf, and that, so I'm doing like 30 copies a month there now. And they're sold out of 1 through 4, I think.
And you just need to do 1,000 more in-store signings.
Yeah, exactly. The in-store signings are helping. And it's always, so far the signings I've done have been at stores that already knew the book and liked it and were pushing it. So, you know, that makes it easier. But there are stores that I know, like, the guy in San Diego said that he was trying to get other stores to, you know, let him put a flyer up that I was going to be signing. And a lot of the other retailers' attitude about it was, I'm not advertising for your store. Which is kind of unfortunate, but one of them asked why he was even having me there to sign, because my book doesn't sell. And he says, it sells at my store. He goes, let me see your pull list. And he says, yeah, like I'm going to show you my pull list.
Wow.
He says, yeah, I have 9 pulls already for it, and I've got about 20 people that are planning on coming to the signing. And he's all, I don't believe you. That book doesn't sell. And I'm like, well, with that attitude, it doesn't.
That's aggressive.
Yeah. And I ended up, I have sketch covers of number 3. There's a variant of number 3 that you can only get from me that is a sketch cover, so it's a blank cover, and I'll do a sketch on the front instead of
on
the back. And I do those for $25 a pop at signings. I made $300 on those at the signing. So
yeah, those are cool.
But, you know, I don't have an audience, so whatever. I do at stores that know how to sell it.
Well, the image I can't hurt because, I mean, pound for pound, I'm gonna go Image over DC and Marvel with the great diverse stuff that's out there, the great writing, the great creator owned stuff. It's just a cut above. It really is. I mean,
a lot of people, a lot of stores though won't because they make their money off of the big two.
Must be like a discount thing or something.
I don't know. Yeah, I wish we sold more. I wish if I could have just stayed at 5,000 copies an issue. Where I'm making about 2,500 a month, you know, that would have been fine. I could live on that. That'd be great. You know, so I'm hoping to build it back up. The nice thing is trades tend to grow your audience some because a lot of people are waiting for the trade. So if the trade ends up blowing a lot of people away, then maybe I can get them to pick up the next mini on an individual basis. And with it being a new number one, I'll at least have a higher starting point out of the gate. And so I'm hoping that it will mean that I start off a bit higher and do a bit better. And it's only going to be 5 issues, so there's not as much time for bleed to happen.
Yeah, the attrition over time won't have as much time. I guess, yeah, that's true.
So I'm hoping that that's another reason to have it, you know, in minis, is that you're not giving it enough time for the attrition to really kick in.
But then financially, it's probably tough to take that time off in between arcs.
Yeah, see, I was wanting to put out a trade and then the very next month go right back at it, and Top Cow's wanting at least a month after the trade comes out to let it saturate, which I can understand, because you want it to get out there and get more people reading it so that it boosts pre-orders for number one of the next arc. But, you know, I don't like having a month where I'm not making income. But, you know, if the trade manages to do even just 1,000, then, you know, like I said, I'm making enough on that that it's actually like I did 2 issues. So that kind of helps me carry over the next month.
That makes, I get that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that's the plan, is to keep doing it that way for as long as I can, you know, keep doing it. And then Top Cow did tell me, you know, Matt did tell me that if the book, the sales drop below 3,000 and I just can't keep doing it, then we put out a different book. So they've kind of made it clear that they want me to keep working there.
And do you have ideas for other things?
Oh, yeah, I have plenty of ideas for more stuff.
You just have to have time.
Yeah, I would just need to either end this one and do something else, or I would need artists to do the art, and I would write it.
Because that's what takes the time, is the art.
Yes, I can write an issue in like 3 days, max. But drawing an issue and toning it and lettering it, all of that takes me 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Highly detailed stuff.
So, yeah, I did issue 5 and issue 6 in about 2 weeks each because I was working insane hours. But so, I mean, I could put out 2 books a month myself if I really wanted to, like, you know...
Kill yourself.
Stab myself in the face afterwards. But...
Well, selfishly, it'd be nice to see 2 books from you, but I don't want you to kill yourself either. So yeah.
No, like I have another idea that when issue six dipped under and looked like it was going to only do about 2,700, I was already okay. What do I do next? Because Matt said, you know, if we have to wrap it up, and we just put out something else, which was a big relief to me that they're interested in more books from me. They want to keep working with me, so I have a job still. You know, I have a door open. It's just a matter of what to do next. So I developed another series and already did some concept art for it, so I know what the next book will be if I do it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and it's going to be about fallen angels in Las Vegas.
So that's why you're moving.
Yeah, well, because that's where I'm moving. It's kind of a nice background, but it also, Sin City is kind of an interesting place for the fallen to gather.
I like it. So, I like it. That's great.
But yeah, and that would be called Pandemonium if I do that book. So that'll be the next thing I do as a writer-artist. I have other books I'm developing just as the writer with other artists that are in various stages of development, but nothing that's been signed to a publisher yet.
I mean, I love the writing. I think it's incredibly authentic voices that you speak with.
Thank you.
But the art is what really blows me away.
Well, thank you, because for a lot of people, it's the other way around. They're like, yeah, the art's okay, but I really like the writing.
Well, the covers in particular are... Just that's amazing.
That's because my wife makes me look good.
She does the colors?
She does the colors from issue 3 on. Yeah. From issue 3 on, she's painting my covers. I draw it, and then she colors over it.
Okay.
Incorporates my line art into the painting. So you're still seeing most of my lines, but she'll tint them to fit the art.
And what's the process, then? You draw everything with a waveform Cintiq?
Wacom Cintiq, yeah.
Wacom Cintiq, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Wacom Cintiq. Wacom is a tablet company, and they donated me a Wacom Cintiq tablet. And the Cintiq tablet, the difference between it and most tablets is, with most tablets, you're drawing on the tablet while you look at the screen. With the Cintiq, the tablet is the screen. So you're drawing directly onto the screen.
Well, that's amazing.
And I am in a wheelchair. I have very limited use of my arms and legs, so I do everything with my mouth. So it really makes it nice for me because I couldn't draw on a tablet that wasn't a screen because my face would be down on the tablet and I couldn't see what I was doing on the screen. So with this, I'm looking right at what I'm working on. So it's like drawing on paper, but better.
What I found amazing was I love the writing. I love the art. I thought it was great. And then after the icing on the cake was, holy smokes, this fella's doing this with a lot more limitations than your average creator. And
thank you.
And it just compounds just how great this book is. So hats off to you, man. It's a great
thank
book.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate that.
And I love the idea of the all digital stuff. I think Revival, the folks at Revival are all digital too, right?
Most comics nowadays are largely, if not all digital, just because everything ends up digital anyway by the time it goes to print. So a lot of artists are finding it easier to work digital. You can go straight to ink. You don't have to pencil because you can just erase your inks, which you can't do on paper. So a lot of stuff nowadays is actually done almost entirely digital.
Which makes the original art market even a bigger feeding frenzy for what little's out there then.
Right. What I do to handle that is I make one print of each page, and it's the only one I ever do of that page at 11 by 17, which is art board size, and I print it just the line art, and I do it black on white with blue bleed guides and stenciling for the issue and page number to make it look like an original page. And I sign and date it, and that's the only one I will ever do of that page at that size, period. So it is my original.
Oh, that's cool.
And
so I've been selling
those for $75 at signings and such, and done okay with them.
Oh, heck yeah, you've done. That's a steal.
So
for a one-of-a-kind piece.
Yeah, and I've been doing the covers the same way with my wife, full color covers. We'll print them at 11 by 17. We won't do all the bleed guide stuff because, you know, it's a full color cover. But we both sign it, and then I date it, and that's the original cover. And any other prints I do of the cover will not be at 11 by 17. They'll be at other sizes. And so that becomes a one-of-a-kind cover, and I've sold those for around $200 or so.
Well, that's awesome. And there's only 7 of them so far.
Yeah. And,
or will be. Will be
probably selling. Going to be going up in price. Because I've had several stores tell me they could get $800 to $1,000 for them from their buyers that do original art and buy covers and things like that, that I should be charging more.
Yeah, that's another market. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
not having talked to anybody else that really does it, I didn't know where to start, and I wanted to start low so that I wasn't pricing myself out of selling anything, and figured I could always bump it up later, and so that's what we're doing.
You read a lot of comics. Do you have time to read any other comics?
Not so much that it's I don't have the time, it's I don't honestly have the money. I've been living on Social Security for 14 years now, and that's like $1,000 a month, and that has to cover everything. So I just really haven't had the money to keep up on most stuff. But
Image can't hook you up with like
they do if I ask, but I have to ask them to send it to me and stuff. So, but no, there's a few books that I do follow. I've been following The Walking Dead forever. I read Rachel Rising. I'm a big Terry Moore fan.
Oh, great!
I was a big Lock and Key fan while it was going. I loved that series. I've recently started getting into Fables. I read Think Tank, which I do get for free, and I read Cyberforce. It's always good to keep up on what the bosses are doing, and I really do like them. I especially enjoy Think Tank.
I like that one as well. It's great.
And I hope to read the new Sandman stuff as it comes out, because I'm a ginormous Sandman fan.
Might have to wait a little while between issues, but...
Yeah, that was one of the two books that really got me back into comics as an adult and showed me that comics can do adult things, was The Crow and Sandman.
Yes, the Neil Gaiman's Sandman was very influential on me. I mean, just really, that I thought, wow, this is what comics can be. This is amazing stuff.
The Crow actually was the first major graphic novel comic, you know, whatever you want to call it, that I read as an adult, you know, having gotten out of comics. The Crow is what started to get me back into comics, and then after The Crow, Sandman.
Have you always drawn and been artistic?
Yeah, I've been drawing since I was a kid. My mom, you did a lot of the teaching me how to draw, because she's an artist as well. And so, like most kids, I liked to draw when I was little. But over the years, I actually got better at it and started taking it more seriously. And then my junior high art teacher trained me in caricature art. And so caricatures is mostly what I've been doing up until recently. And that's where my background as an artist comes from, which is why I tell people I can draw faces really well, but the rest of it I'm still learning, because that's the background I come from.
That's amazing, because I would never think caricature when I'm looking at the art in Voice in the Dark. It seems real and realistic. And
it's different than my caricature style, but...
Well, that's great.
But the background comes from that, so...
Your latest, we've got 6 and 7 coming up, because 5 is out. So A Voice in the Dark, 5 is out. We've got 6 coming up, 7 in May.
Correct.
And then we have the Voice in the Dark trade paperback collecting all 7... with back matter in a bonus story. That's $19.99, 208 pages. That comes out June 11th.
Correct.
That will be the capper for this first story arc. Then we're going to relaunch kind of with a new number one of a mini. Is that correct? Or are we going to call it 8?
No, we're calling it number one, 105 for that mini.
And then we'll follow a trade after each 5.
Right, and then if it does well, then there'll be another mini that will be 1 of 4, 1 of 5, whatever I end up doing. And as long as it continues, then we'll keep putting out new minis. As long as it, you know, continues to sell decently, then there'll be a new mini every few months.
Yeah, everyone at Comic Book Page and Comics for Fun and Profit, we love your book, and we look forward to it coming out. Is there anything else you need to plug while you're on here we need to talk about? Anything coming up that you got appearances coming up or anything?
I'm going to be at WonderCon in April. I have a table in Artist Alley, and I'm hoping to be and should be at Amazing Las Vegas in June, because I'm moving to Las Vegas in May.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm hoping to do San Diego again this year in July to help sell the trade, because it'll have come out in June. So
you'll be in the Image booth, or you'll be...
If I go, I'll be at the Top Cow booth, probably.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I'll see if I can maybe get some Image booth time as well.
And then how can they reach you if they want to check you out on Facebook or Twitter?
Well, at Twitter, my Twitter handle is xlaramiex, and that's L-A-R-I-M-E. So xlaramiex. And then my email address is the same at gmail.com. And my website is laramietaylor.com.
Fantastic. I appreciate you spending some time with me today, and good luck with the book. We
Thank
love
you.
It.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you guys like it, and thanks for having me on.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.